Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Next Brave Thing podcast. Today, I'm going to be exploring guidepost number 8 in Dr. Brené Brown's Guidepost to Living Wholehearted. And number 8 is cultivating calm and still and letting go of anxiety as a lifestyle. Now, I know some of you listeners may not really struggle with anxiety. What I have learned, there are more probably the more I kind of meet with people and learn different personalities and learn, just how life affects different people, I see that there are definitely some personalities that are more prone to anxiety than others. Just like I think there's some personalities a bit more prone to shame. My personality is definitely more prone to anxiety. I'm an Enneagram 6, for those of you who know the Enneagram. So an Enneagram 6 is a loyalist, and they tend to go, like, when they're in their stress, when they're in stress, they'll go to the worst case scenario. So I can get quite suspicious and anxious, and some of it has been like me being discerning, but then I think there's a difference between being suspicious and being discerning. So I've had to kind of really learn to regulate my emotions and understand how anxiety shows up for me so that I don't live in a lifestyle of anxiety. And then I think if you grew up in the church, if you have anxiety, it can often be demonized, like it's a bad thing, you shouldn't have it, and or dismissing it. And so you kind of, just pretend you don't have it because you shouldn't have it. Anyway, I'm so glad that we're evolving more in our spiritual practices and that sort of thing. So I wanted today to talk about something that I have fought a lot for in my life, and that is peace and calm and learning how to cultivate it. And what I have learned is that calm is something that you feel in your body. It's not something that comes in your thoughts or your mind. So if your body is calm, your thought life will be calm. So I think as you've gone on this series and listening to the different guests I've had on, I've been talking a lot about the nervous system. So I wanted to tap into some of my personal ways of really cultivating calm and letting go of anxiety. I've done a podcast before on anxiety, and so I'm going to incorporate a little bit of what I've learned from that, what I spoke about in that episode into this one. But when I think of calm, I actually want you to think about a memory that you've had or a moment that you've had where you felt really calm, whether it was like you were in the presence of someone, you're around someone. Think of like a safe or calm presence or someone that you've been around that feels calm. And I immediately think of my first Christmas in America. It was 2014 and it was a winter Christmas. And that was a big deal because, and it was very novel because I've always had summer Christmases in Australia. So going to America and having a winter Christmas, and we were up in a more snowy area, like kind of near the border of Oregon and Northern California. And it was like we went to this cabin and it was a group of friends, and I just remember feeling like in a bubble, like there was no Wi-Fi. I think there was a couple of DVDs. We had, you know, there was a couple of girls from the UK there, one girl from Switzerland, another Aussie I was with. And so we were all kind of bringing our cultural things to the mix, like, and we had mulled wine, and it was just the best experience and like such a feeling of at rest, at peace. And it was like nothing else in the world mattered. Like it just felt so beautiful. Like, and I remember waking up and we would sit in the rocking chairs outside and it was kind of cold, but we had blankets and our hot coffees that kind of didn't taste the greatest because it was American coffee, no offense guys, but it was still an amazing, beautiful, just dreamy experience. And it was like this magical experience that was on the other side of a big risk for me. So I know that that was even satisfying because there was such a big lead up to moving countries. And then to be on the other side of feeling like, oh, that risk was so worth it. This is such a magical experience. And I'm being able to connect with some beautiful friends that I feel so safe with. And we can share anything we want. We can dream big. We can, like, there's no shame, no hiding, and just being fully ourselves. And I just remember that being such an experience of like calm and stillness. Like, there was nowhere we had to be. There was nothing we had to concern ourselves with. There was just joy and laughter and ease. And I think, like, I think that is such a beautiful picture of like what calm can feel like. And I often think, like, if I'm imagining a place of calm, I'll always go back to imagining that cabin and how that felt. Because our imagination is powerful. When you think about like what our fear drives and what our fear does to our imagination, it can take us down into pretty dark places, into such distortions. And so that's why, like, remembering and noticing and taking in moments of calm, of goodness, is really, really good for our nervous system because it teaches us that we are safe. And even if we don't feel emotionally safe right now, we can come back to those places and center ourselves. But in order for me to kind of let go of anxiety, I had to actually recognize that anxiety is a messenger. It's not something that I'm trying to attack and kill and get rid of. It's trying to communicate something to me. And so if you're someone that struggles with anxiety, or you have someone that struggles with anxiety, probably the worst thing that you can do to someone who struggles with anxiety is to dismiss their experience and say, God's got it. You don't need to be anxious for anything. Because while I know that's scriptural and that's good, and it's an invitation into, we don't have to live our life in anxiety, but we can learn to get curious about what our anxiety is telling us. And so I like to ask myself these few questions that help me kind of regulate and come back to center, come back to calm. And I like to ask myself, like, is this anxiety alerting me to something truly dangerous? Because sometimes our anxiety, like, interprets something as life impending doom, but it's actually not that. And so it's helpful to recognize that. Another question to ask yourself with anxiety is a boundary being crossed. Is someone like crossing a boundary with you? And so that's what's making you anxious. And then, and if that is the case, that's the opportunity to explore how to learn how to put in boundaries and really value yourself and communicate like what's okay and what's not okay. And then another question to ask yourself is does your nervous system feel unsafe because something is new and different? So our body doesn't know how to differentiate between what's a bad thing with anxiety or what's a good thing. So if you are having something exciting happening, sometimes our nervous system just gets overstimulated. It's like when you are performing, it's like that's not a bad thing to get up and perform for something, but your body doesn't know that that's not a life-threatening situation. And then sometimes we have anxiety because we have suppressed emotions. And so if you're someone that bottles down your emotions a lot, you're going to, and you don't know how to healthily express them. So if you have a lot of resentment or, yeah, even frustration, it's going to create anxiety because there's been some unprocessed emotion. And then you can ask yourself if you're in like a cognitive distortion. So if you're in all or nothing thinking black and white, that's often like anxiety speaking in those moments. And then sometimes like anxiety is wanting us to take action. So if we're avoiding, like if you're a college student and you're avoiding doing homework and you're leaving it to the last minute, your anxiety is telling you, hey, I would love it if you could be a bit more prepared so you're not stressing me out last minute. And so sometimes it's like asking your anxiety of like, oh, what do I need to do? What action do I need to take in order to free myself from this anxiety? So that's why I don't like to take a general approach to anxiety, because your anxiety is communicating something to you. So if I have someone with me that I'm meeting with and they have a lot of anxiety, but they're avoiding a lot of things, then it's like, how can we make you feel safe enough to take some action in that area? Because anxiety is going to take us out of our authentic self and out of our identity. And so when we learn how to regulate our emotions and, yeah, work through that anxiety and break off distortion, because a lot of it can be distortion and a lot of it is, like I've heard it said that shame fears the light, anxiety fears the dark. So it's like, yeah, shame doesn't want to be exposed, whereas anxiety, like, yeah, is afraid of the dark. And so it's kind of working through like, what are we anxious about? And sometimes, yeah, if you've had trauma, it would really make sense that you would have some paranoia or you would go into some, have some intrusive thoughts. And so that's definitely valid. But the way to kind of start, the important thing is like, we can live such a lifestyle run by that. And that's why I love glimmers and finding those little moments where you can increase feelings of feeling good and feeling safe and feeling calm, because that the more that you take notice and be intentional about that, you'll be able to increase your window of tolerance so that you don't go slipping into anxiety at any moment. The scripture that I really love is Psalm 94, verse 19 in the Passion Translation. It says, "Whenever my busy thoughts were out of control, the soothing comfort of your presence calmed me down and overwhelmed me with delight." And there's something that is so powerful, like we can kind of find calm in nature and find the presence of God in those places. But I always feel like the Psalms are a really great place to connect with God's presence. And God's presence is so comforting and soothing, and it can take us out of our kind of rational mind of trying to solve our problems. And I think that something that I've built into my life is place of contemplation and meditation, so that I always know that there's a place that I can go to find calm. Because I think that in our anxiety, we are trying to fix and trying to solve. We're in flight or fight. You know, we're in threat, and we're, you know, going to people or counselors or going to all these places to try and regulate. And oh my gosh, if I get more information about this health issue I'm going through, then that will help regulate me. Or if I get more information about how to be the perfect parent, that will help regulate me. And we think that information is going to regulate us, but it's really like what we're needing is soothing and comforting. That's why I love the wording of this scripture in this translation. That's like this, our busy thoughts are out of control and the soothing comfort of your presence like slows me down. And I've had different seasons where I'm like, it's actually too overwhelming to process my emotions about something or process a dynamic that's happening because I'm so busy. And I just found like it's so powerful to just sit in silence for 5 minutes. And it's like an art form to train yourself to be a really good listener. I think we can all agree that the world out there, especially in social media, is so noisy, and it gets us into this agitated state where we're having arguments with strangers online, like in our heads. And there has to be this sacred place that we go to, whether it's in our day, in our morning or our evening, where we can actually just clear out the noise. And I love Strawn Coleman's books and his prayer poetry for this. He talks about like, God has given us the art of uncrowding our souls. And so most of, if I've had to kind of be set time aside to really uncrowd my soul, and that's even when I'll often meditate or I'll just, you know, because you wake up feeling like very disoriented, depending on what dream you had, you can feel all over the place. And a way of like finding center, finding calm, if for me, is actually having like, I even write it down the night before that I'm going to get out of bed, meditate. Like, so straight away, I'm actually not going to my phone. I'm not going to scroll on social media or whatever. And I'm actually going to center myself. And, you know, like the art of contemplation is basically going from your amygdala, where you're in your kind of triggered state, into your prefrontal cortex. And contemplation is really living in your prefrontal cortex. So you're going, in the Bible, it talks about being seated in heavenly places. And when you think about it, I've had Donna Winship on the podcast, and we talked about like different worldviews, the connected worldview and the scarcity worldview. And the scarcity worldview is often what I wake up to. That's what's kind of racing through my mind. Not enough time, not enough money, not enough opportunities. Like you can kind of get caught up into that. And it keeps us trapped in the noise. And I love how Strawn Coleman, like even if you think about all the problems that you have to face in your day, whether it's a marriage problem, a, you know, raising kids problem, a work problem, there's so much, even if you like get overwhelmed with the system we're in, like we're all in a system, we're in a healthcare system, we're in church systems, like if you get overwhelmed with the lack inside our world system, it can feel so you can feel so defeated and so discouraged. And, you know, and so what contemplation does, it really takes us into our intuitive mind, into our creative mind. And Strawn Coleman says that we don't need more good ideas, we need divine ones. And so what contemplation does, and getting into that headspace, that meditative state, it gives us, it gets us into creative thinking. But scarcity asks us, what is there not enough of? Time, money, resources, help. There's not enough love. There's not enough peace. And so when we're stuck there, we're actually operating from fear or the threat system. There's lots of threats. And so learning how to cultivate stillness and calm gets us out of that hyper alert and threat system space. So the invitation is to move into the intuitive mind, that place that rises above the noise. And we basically, we want to learn to live from our prefrontal cortex, not the amygdala. So when we're triggered, the amygdala is the back part of your, at the bottom of your head, where the blood flow goes through there. But when we are more in our regulated state, in our prefrontal cortex, the blood has gone to our prefrontal cortex, which is where all our creative ideas come from. And the thing is, like, most of us are actually just trained to live from our amygdala, the fear brain. We default there in self-protection and self-promotion, our fight, flight, freeze. And it's often the lens that we evaluate our life from. And what I'm trying to do is not evaluate where I'm at in my life based on when I know I'm in my amygdala. And that actually takes some training and self-awareness to get to know, like, hey, am I actually feeling regulated or am I dysregulated in this moment? So we really want to take our thoughts captive when we know we're in our amygdala, because perfect love casts out fear. And when we're in our prefrontal cortex, that's the place of faith and vision and imagination and creativity and dreams. And this is how Jesus taught. He used imagery. He said, look at the birds. Look at how they don't worry about what they're going to eat. Like the way that Jesus spoke, he used our imagination to take us out of that fear lens, and he brought us into a higher way of thinking by using and engaging with our imagination. And so that's what contemplation and using our intuitive mind does. And Einstein says that we need our intuitive mind to be the master, and the rational mind is the servant that works it out. Often we, I think in society, and what Einstein's alluding to is that we use our rational mind as the master, and the intuitive mind goes on the back burner. So, for example, it's like Mozart seeing an entire symphony in his mind. So he would contemplate and see an entire symphony, but then he would pull it down for his rational mind. He would pull it down and write the notes for the clarinet player to play them. And I love Jamie Winship. He says, no human innovation happens without contemplation. And fear shuts down creativity. And you can't receive anything new when you're in fear. And so some of you and myself, we all kind of face impossible things in our life, whether that's the complexities of relationships or, yeah, just really hard things where we feel stuck in self-sabotage and like difficult moments. And I think if we can build a practice where we set aside time to really contemplate and to elevate ourselves above what all the noise is saying, that is where we're going to find the greatest sense of calm and creativity and connectedness. And it's going to give us insight. And it's really the art of listening. I think a lot of people approach prayer as like worrying their way through to God, like, or complaining and that sort of thing. And I really view prayer as really more listening, learning how to actually listen and hear guidance. And I think when we start to cultivate that into our life, it definitely compounds to the point where we actually know how to find that place. And so throughout my day, it's very normal for me to have a low moment or a triggered moment because we're all human. But I know the place that has become truer and true, more true to me. So I used to have like, I'd spend time in the morning, maybe with God or like praying or whatever, reading my Bible. And then I would go to work or get an email, and it's almost like it would hit the ejection button and make me go straight down to like feeling like an orphan, feeling terrible. And oh my gosh, I was feeling so good this morning. And then I just started feeling terrible when I get an email or something would trigger me. And I think the more I've learned how to regulate and come back to this as the greatest truth of who I am and where I'm at, the more I've been able to find it. It's been my home base. And so I think as you're listening to this, like, what is your home base? And I do know, like, this is the place where I have learned how to listen for other people and to be able to like have wisdom for other people and be able to speak into people's lives. And it's not from my own like thoughts. It's actually from a divine perspective that, you know, I can access, you know, this stuff. So I think that everybody can access this. And so I encourage you to, yeah, like turn off the AirPods, turn off the music, turn off the social media and get quiet. And I'm forever inspired by Strawn Coleman because he's such a creative and such a mystical human. And I love how authentic and real and non-religious he is. But I think I asked him what the secret to his creativity was. And it was because he spent a lot of time in silence. And I feel really challenged by that because I don't do the best job about it, but I feel challenged and inspired by that. And so I just leave you with that thought of like, how can you cultivate more stillness, more spaciousness? It might be driving home from work with no music on. It might be going for a walk without putting your headphones in. It might be standing in line at the grocery store, not looking at your phone. And so I just encourage you to start to slow down internally. And it's a slowing down internally. It's not necessarily not being productive or not making things happen. It's actually just having a calm presence. And I think the highest compliment, one of my friends who I think might be listening to this episode, she was visiting from America and she says, "You are so much more peaceful." And I think it's from all the nervous system work that I've done, but it was definitely encouraging that being in my presence actually felt more peaceful being around that. And so it's something that you can also start to cultivate, to learn to be a non-anxious presence, to be a present person that, yeah, can hold people, the people you love in your life, and have words of peace and wisdom that you can offer people that's not, you know, coming from a stressed out, fearful place. Anyway, thanks for listening today, guys. We're wrapping up our Wholehearted series and I'll be sharing a little bit more about what's to come. But thank you again for listening and I hope you have a wonderful week.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.